Here is chapter one from the Wuhan cover-up and the terrifying bioweapons arms race by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I'm doing this as a reading as a volunteer for Kennedy's campaign. I think this is an important piece of literature, if you will, or documentary information. Chapter one. The Soothsayers. Like a pair of Cassandras, Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci spent a decade prophesying a worldwide coronavirus pandemic with what in retrospect seems eerie precision. Preaching their doomsday Jeremiads on the favored rostrums of the global elite, the World Economic Forum's roundtable in Davos, the United Nations podium in New York, the World Health Organization's WHO platform in Geneva, Silicon Valley stages, and from network television studios, these savvy seers wage their frantic crusade to rouse the complacent public, press, and politicians to the imminent threat of calamity by contagion. In March 2015, poised on a dais beneath a Goliath screen depicting the now familiar pincushion coronavirus orb, Gates warned his TED Talk audience that the defining catastrophe of our time would be, quote unquote, not missiles but microbes. 2 years later, on January 10th, 2017, 10 days before Donald Trump took the oath of office, and just 24 months before COVID-19 found its U.S. beachhead in Seattle, Dr. Fauci, speaking at a pandemic preparedness forum at Georgetown University, predicted the precise timing of the coronavirus pandemic. There is no question that there will be a challenge to the coming Trump administration in the arena of infectious diseases, Dr. Fauci added. There will be a surprise outbreak. The thing we're extraordinarily confident about is that we are going to see this in the next few years. He was right. It would be almost exactly 3 years later. Both men, and I just want to say that in the text here, Kennedy has put in brackets the Trump administration. He added that that was not the quote, the exact quote from Fauci, just so people know that for sure. Okay, both men agreed that the only strategy for averting this inevitable calamity was an Apollo 11 magnitude private income and public investment in a new generation of turnkey mRNA vaccine technology, which they predicted was the only remedy that could save humanity from the coming plague. Gates also was so certain of the impending pandemic, for which his mRNA vaccines would be the only remedy, that he committed vassal organizations, the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations, or CEPI, and Gavi, formerly the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, to raise hundreds of millions of dollars for the development of vaccine platform technologies, enabling rapid deployment for as yet unknown emerging infectious diseases designated as, quote unquote, Disease X. The Gates Foundation pledged United States $750 million to set up Gavi in 1999 as a vehicle for diverting the foreign aid budgets of Western countries to promote vaccine uptake in developing nations. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, BMGF, afterward poured billions into Gavi's vaccine program. Gates created CEPI at the World Economic Forum, WEF, meeting in Davos, Switzerland in 2017 to encourage global collaboration in promoting and developing vaccines, including new ones for emerging infectious diseases like, quote-unquote, disease X. CEPI, or CEPI, promised that its innovative mRNA, I'm going to call it mRNA, mRNA, mRNA vaccine platform would allow it to rapidly manufacture vaccines against many different types of disease. No one seemed to think it reckless to spend millions in grievously needed public health dollars for inoculations against a malady that did not yet exist. It's noteworthy that both Gates and Dr. Fauci hinted that the anticipated pandemic might come from a deliberately weaponized virus. A month after Dr. Fauci's 2017 Georgetown speech, Gates asked the annual conclave of Western intelligence agency leaders at the Munich Security Conference to imagine that somewhere in the world a new weapon exists or could emerge that is capable of killing millions of people, bringing economies to a standstill, and casting nations into chaos. Gates scolded attendees at a Massachusetts Medical Society and New England Journal of Medicine event on April 27, 2018, saying, "If it were a military weapon, the response would be to do everything possible to develop countermeasures. A quote-unquote sense of urgency is lacking," he said, "when it comes to biologic threats." In March 2019, the Wuhan Institute of Virology's gain-of-function impresario Xi Zhengli, also known as Batwoman, and her colleagues forecast, "It is highly likely that future SARS or MERS-like coronavirus outbreaks will originate from bats, and there is an increased probability that this will occur in China." The peculiar accuracy of this prediction of an impending coronavirus pandemic was especially impressive since, in the recorded history of mankind, coronaviruses had never caused a pandemic. While flu, particularly avian flu, could be both deadly and contagious, the deadly coronaviruses did not transmit easily among humans, which is why the 2003 SARS outbreak waned so quickly, with only 774 deaths among the world's 6.2 billion people. Furthermore, the United States National Institute of Health, NIH, had already identified numerous off-the-shelf remedies, including vitamin D, zinc, the antibiotic azithromycin, or Zithromax, and hydroxychloroquine, with devastating effectiveness against coronaviruses, both as a prophylaxis and cure. Nevertheless, on March 28, 2019, 6 months before COVID-19 would ultimately kick in, the government-funded Cambridge, Massachusetts biotech startup Moderna amended its previously rejected patent application for its mRNA vaccine platform to seek federal patent approval for a coronavirus vaccine with renewed urgency. Moderna begged the United States Patent Office to act with alacrity, citing a concern for reemergence or a deliberate release of the SARS coronavirus. Moderna's CEO, Stéphane Bancel, had some inside knowledge that may have informed that extraordinarily prescient appeal. Bancel, as the former CEO of bioMérieux, the French company that built the 44 million Wuhan Institute of Virology, a biosafety level 4 BSL-4 lab, likely had insider knowledge of the lab's reported difficulties with the critical airflow system required to keep transmissible viruses from escaping. I just want to stop here real quickly. Most everything that's in this that I'm reading here has multiple citations and footnote, so you can look all of this stuff up. I just want to let you know that. I'm not going into that part of it, but we're up to like 34 citations right now. Okay, let's go back to the text here. How could Bansal possibly know such inside details about the Wuhan lab? He was CEO of BioMaru when it built the Wuhan lab, and Bansal had elsewhere demonstrated the same uncanny gift of foresight. In 2016, Moderna patented the general concept of using the spike protein in coronavirus vaccines. The world now knows that the spike protein is the basis of all the United States vaccines designed to prevent COVID-19. A breathtaking pantheon of government allies and corporate titans had placed hefty bets on Moderna, a company that with no marketable products and no record of ever having brought a single drug or device to successful approval. Its value seemed entirely dependent on the remote chance that a novel viral pandemic would emerge, and its principal investors had the political clout to both create a humongous global market for its untested vaccine and suppress cheap and effective remedies with proven safety records. The United States government would ultimately commit nearly $10 billion to the young company. NIH claims part ownership of the Moderna patent. Bill Gates kicked in $20 million as early as 2016. Robert Kadlec was Trump's assistant secretary for preparedness and response of Health and Human Services and de facto supervisor of the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority, or known as BARDA, BARDA, which invested an astonishing $955 million in the biotech startup. Michael Callahan, an influential CIA officer and a director of the Pentagon's Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, had also contributed unknown millions to Moderna through DARPA when it was still developing an experimental vaccine platform awaiting a disease. In August 2020, Moderna informed Axios that 100% of its current funding was from the federal government. Collectively, Bill Gates and his U.S. government partners would eventually invest some $2.5 billion of taxpayer and, in the case of Gates Foundation, tax-deductible dollars in Moderna. Gates, Fauci, and Bansal were not the only prophets of panicky pandemic prognostications. Beginning in January 2019, 1 year before WHO declared a global emergency, other powerful actors with ties to Big Pharma and Western government agencies began taking actions that, in retrospect, appear to be strangely prescient omens of the approaching COVID storm. That month, WHO, by then a vassal of the BMGF, issued the eyebrow-raising declaration that vaccine hesitancy was one of the top 10 threats to public health, alongside AIDS, air pollution, and climate change, and ahead of cancer, dysentery, and malaria, who provided no scientific citation to support this declaration. Simultaneously, pharma-financed politicians launched a global campaign to make all vaccines mandatory and to abolish religious, philosophical, and medical exemptions to vaccines. Within weeks of WHO's pronouncement, legislators in 50 United States, the House of Representatives and parliamentarians in countries across the globe had submitted hundreds of bills abolishing vaccine exemptions, compelling vaccines for school-age children. The American Medical Association and the American Academy of Pediatrics, influential trade organizations that rely heavily on pharmaceutical industry largesse, had fallen in line by 2016, issuing frantic calls for abolishing exemptions. NIH, the Centers for Disease Control, or CDC, and the pharmaceutical industry began pumping millions of dollars into propaganda and psychological warfare campaigns for promoting vaccines and overcoming vaccine hesitancy. In a modern iteration of the CIA mind control program, MKUltra, federal health agencies and United States aid funded the emergence of a cottage industry among university social scientists and physicians exploiting psychological warfare techniques for battling vaccine resistance. In February and March of 2019, the House Intelligence Committee's powerful chairman, Adam Schiff, sent letters to Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg, Google CEO Sundar Pichai, and Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos, pressuring them to censor vaccine misinformation on their respective platforms. In September 2019, the BMGF presciently purchased over 3 million shares of little-known company named BioNTech, which was soon to be making COVID vaccines, for $18.10 a share. Gates' $55 million investment would be worth $550 million by August 2021, less than 2 years later. Gates sold the majority of his stake that quarter at the stock's peak. In November of that year, he publicly confessed that the vaccines he had aggressively promoted and profited from did not prevent the spread of COVID. It was almost as if the vaccine industry was working with the world's most powerful political leadership and institutions to lay the groundwork for something momentous that was about to happen. Although the world would first hear of COVID-19 in January 2020, evidence compiled by United States intelligence agencies and leading academic institutions, including Harvard and Brown, suggests that COVID-19 was already circulating in Wuhan in 2019 and that the Chinese government was taking aggressive actions to stanch its spread. And in June 2023, journalists reported speaking to United States government investigators who confirmed that it was indeed circulating prior to official Chinese reports. As I show in The Real Anthony Fauci, Gates and Dr. Fauci, in all of their frantic predictions, were acting in concert with United States intelligence agencies, which had participated in over a dozen pandemic simulations between 1999 and 2019, involving tens of thousands of political leaders, health regulators, and first responders in numerous countries. Each simulation emphasized a militarized response, using a coronavirus, anthrax, or flu pandemic as a pretext for imposing totalitarian controls. I document those portentous exercises in Germ Games, the final chapter of The Real Anthony Fauci. And why would Gates be talking about the upcoming pandemic to a conclave of spies at the Munich Security Conference? As I detailed in The Real Anthony Fauci, intelligence agencies were deeply involved in the controversial and risky virus discovery and virus gain-of-function research. Gain-of-function describes research intended to increase the transmissibility and or virulence of pathogenic organisms. In fact, major funders of this rising research included the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, which frequently operates as a CIA front. EcoHealth Alliance, also a CIA front, according to its then Vice President, Dr. Andrew Huff, and the National Institutes of Health, NIH, through Anthony Fauci's division, the National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Diseases, NIAID, which boasts a long-standing role in bioweapons research for the Pentagon and the CIA. Many of the spies at the Munich Security Conference were deeply involved in promoting the biosecurity agenda and in performing GOF experiments. The steady promotion of the biosecurity agenda by these agencies since 2001 assured that they would profit exponentially and expand powers if some accident triggered a global pandemic. For two decades, the CIA had been preparing public officials and policymakers for this specific eventuality through a series of drills that embedded a response strategically calculated to increase the influence, authority, and the reach of the security state. In October 2019, the month after COVID probably began circulating in Wuhan, and just a little over 2 months before the Chinese government notified the WHO that a coronavirus pneumonia was spreading person to person in China, Bill Gates and former CIA Deputy Director Avril Haines, soon to be Director of National Intelligence, and President Joe Biden's chief coronavirus advisor, hosted a New York event simulating a global coronavirus pandemic that would kill 60 million people. They called this tabletop drill Event 201. The Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security sponsored Event 201 in partnership with the World Economic Forum and the BMGF. China's Center for Disease Control Director George Gao and U.S. representatives from social and mainstream media and the pharmaceutical industry also participated. NIH and NIAID are the principal contributors to the Johns Hopkins Center, having donated a breathtaking $14 billion in grants since 1999. The BMGF founded the Bill and Melinda Gates Institute for Population and Reproductive Health at the Johns Hopkins University School of Public Health in 1999, and ponied up an astonishing $973 million to Johns Hopkins between 1997 and 2022. Organizers distributed swag bags containing a bristling coronavirus plush pillow, virtually identical in appearance to artistic renditions of the Organizers distributed swag bags containing a bristling coronavirus plush pillow, virtually identical in appearance to artistic renditions of the COVID-19 virus. That week, the real pandemic coronavirus was already spreading across the planet as athletes returned home from the military world games in Wuhan. Event 201 was the fourth pandemic simulation by this group. As I detail in The Real Anthony Fauci, CIA-linked officers were the principal planners in each of these exercises, and at least a dozen more that I likewise describe high-level former and or current CIA and NQTEL leaders also participated in each exercise. NQTEL is the CIA's venture capital firm, which invests in information technology to ensure that our spies have the latest gadgetry. The co-founder and former director of Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, Tara O'Toole, is currently executive vice president at InQtel. Each exercise shared additional commonalities. Most significantly, they uniformly omit any serious consideration of public health. Instead, in essence, they use contagion as a pretext for imposing totalitarian controls, abolishing rights to free speech and peaceable assembly, the free exercise of religion via the closure of churches, property rights via the mass closure of businesses, and the right to jury trial by providing immunity to makers of the vaccines and other companies and institutions involved in their distribution without the need to prove efficacy or safety, and trampling the Fourth Amendment prohibition against unreasonable searches and seizures. The exercises utilized many of the propaganda devices developed by the CIA for imposing controls in indigenous societies by collapsing economies, idling workforces, shuttering institutions, isolating and polarizing individuals, closeting senior citizens away from their families and institutions, and otherwise sowing chaos, hopelessness, fear, and despair. These tactics induce a condition known as Stockholm Syndrome, in which a captive becomes beholden to their captors and convinced that the path to survival is, paradoxically, total obedience. Such captives react angrily when anyone criticizes their captor or their captivity. Wow, that's a powerful paragraph right there. Let me read that again. The exercises utilized many of the propaganda devices developed by the CIA for imposing controls in indigenous societies by collapsing economies, idling workforces, shuttering institutions, isolating and polarizing individuals, closeting senior citizens away from their families and institutions, and otherwise sowing chaos, hopelessness, fear, and despair. These tactics induce a condition known as Stockholm Syndrome, in which a captive becomes beholden to their captors and convinced that the path to survival is paradoxically total obedience. Such captives react angrily when anyone criticizes their captor or their captivity. The most recent of these exercises was a virtual simulation sponsored by Sam Nunn and the Nuclear Threat Initiative, NTI, at the March 2021 Munich Security Conference. That exercise miraculously predicted a global monkeypox pandemic emerging in May of 2022. Just as an aside here, I remember this because we were teasing about it, my son and I and my granddaughter and stuff, because she had a boyfriend at the time. I'm sorry, this is just a personal anecdote. But you know, they really were using these tactics on all of us. And I remember this specifically about the monkeypox. That exercise miraculously predicted a global monkeypox pandemic emerging in May of 2022. The CIA's foresight was particularly impressive, since monkeypox had never spread easily from human to human before. Sure enough, right on cue, in July of 2022, just as the COVID panic was waning from exhaustion, WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus, I don't know how to say his name very well, Ghebreyesus, defied his own expert panel and declared monkeypox a public health emergency of international concern. there's an acronym here, PHEIC, Public Health Emergency International Concern. The mainstream press barely noticed the CIA's remarkable ability to accurately predict the arrival of infectious contagions. The unerring accuracy of those clairvoyant predictions might lead even the most credulous and stolid observer to wonder whether these periodic and unprecedented infectious disease pandemics were advancing some hidden agenda shared by the people who first forecast, then declared them. In 2019, Event 201 and 2021 monkeypox simulations were disturbingly similar to the CIA's June 2001 Dark Winter tabletop exercise, which launched the biosecurity era. That exercise, which simulated a smallpox attack on the United States, took place only 3 months prior to the momentous real-world anthrax attacks in the United States Capitol. Just as Dark Winter anticipated the anthrax attacks that occurred mere months later, and the NTI accurately predicted the monkeypox outbreak almost to the precise month of the WHO's declaration of a public health emergency of international concern, 18 months later, Event 201 predicted the coronavirus pandemic. But perhaps more importantly, it also laid out the strategy for censoring public speculation that the pandemic may have originated as a lab leak. 6 days after Event 201, on October 29, 2019, Anthony Fauci and BARDA director Rick Bright hosted a gathering of top virologists and vaccinologists at the Milken Institute, an independent California economic think tank, to discuss the global crisis of vaccine hesitancy and strategies for streamlining vaccine development and approval. In a fevered repartee, Bright ominously suggested that there might be a need or even an urgent call for an entity of excitement out there that's completely disruptive, that's not beholden to bureaucratic strings and processes. He hinted that only a global health crisis like a pandemic could induce government and industry to commit the billions of dollars necessary to create a new generation of quote-unquote plug-and-play mRNA vaccines and to remove traditional safety requirements so as to streamline coercive mass vaccination programs. Situated at the fulcrum of the biosecurity cartel, Bright, an immunologist and vaccine researcher, worked at the CDC in the influenza division, strain surveillance branch from 2003 until 2006, where he played a key role in promoting Sir Jeremy Farrar's overhyped 2005 avian flu epidemic. More on that in Chapter 54. Before retiring to the private sector as a flu vaccine researcher for Novavax, he served as advisor to NIH, WHO, and the Department of Defense, the DOD, specializing in vaccine and pandemic propaganda. In 2008, he moved to the Program for Appropriate Technology and Health, PATH, and the BMGF, Bill Melinda Gates Foundation. As incident commander, he was responsible for countermeasures against Zika virus. He joined BARDA in 2010 and served as director from 2016 to 2020, before moving to NIH. President Joe Biden named him to his coronavirus advisory board in November 2020. Bright earned his PhD at Emory and a degree in vaccinology at Fondation Meru, an institution associated with BioMeru, the company that constructed the Wuhan lab. Bright fleshes out his proposal with details that now seem extraordinarily prescient. But it is not too, this is quoted, but it is not too crazy to think that an outbreak of a novel avian virus could occur in China somewhere. We could get the RNA sequence from that, beam it to a number of regional centers, if not local, if not even in your home at some point, and print those vaccines on a patch and self-administer. End quote. A video of the Milken Institute panel reveals Anthony Fauci complaining that releasing a vaccine the proper way takes at least 10 years, far too long in his estimation. Dr. Fauci laments that the public doesn't ever take flu infections seriously and declares that health officials need to push laggard recalcitrants with extraordinary crisis that would justify shattering conventional safety norms. I don't care what your perception is, we're going to address the problem in a disruptive way and A video of the Milken Institute panel reveals Anthony Fauci complaining that releasing a vaccine the proper way takes at least 10 years, far too long in his estimation. Dr. Fauci laments that the public doesn't ever take flu infections seriously and declares that health officials need to push laggard recalcitrants with extraordinary crises that would justify shattering conventional safety norms. Quote, I don't care what your perception is. We're going to address the problem in a disruptive way and in an iterative, reproducible way, he promises ominously, because you do need both, end quote. Vaccinologists know long-term safety studies are an unfortunate necessity because of what the Supreme Court calls the unavoidable adverse effects of vaccines, including serious injuries such as brain damage and deaths. Many of those adverse side effects have long incubation periods and diagnostic horizons that make them invisible in short-duration safety studies. Dr. Fauci's optimism at the October 2019 Milken conference about fast-track approval for vaccines contrasts strongly with a 1999 PBS Nova interview in which he warns that abbreviating vaccine safety studies could result in disaster. And here's a quote. If you take it and then a year goes by and everybody's fine, then you say, okay, that's good. Now let's give it to 500 people. And then a year goes by and everything's fine. You say, well, then now let's give it to 1,000 people. And then you find out that it takes 12 years for all hell to break loose. And then what have you done? During the Milken conference, Michael Spector, the New Yorker staff writer, who has served as Dr. Fauci's Boswell and local acolyte for decades, made a suggestion that would seem both prescient and sinister a year later. Why don't we blow the system up? I mean, obviously we can't just turn off the spigot on the system we have and then say, hey, everyone in the world should get this new vaccine we haven't given to anyone yet. But there must be some way. End quote. In reality, despite Gates's and Fauci's hysteria, it was hardly a foregone conclusion that a coronavirus or even the flu should cause a global crisis. Multiple CDC and NIH studies indicate that well-fed populations with clean water and access to antibiotics face minimal risk from the kind of pathogenic disease epidemics that decimated earlier generations. Mortality from infectious diseases had dropped precipitously by about 74% since the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918. Tony Fauci himself acknowledged in 2008 Journal of Infectious Diseases article that the Spanish flu's outsized mortalities were not from the flu virus, but from bacterial pneumonia, now easily treated with antibiotics. A comprehensive 2000 study by Johns Hopkins and the CDC found that by the 1950s, improved nutrition, sanitation, and chlorinated drinking water had abolished mass mortalities from infectious diseases. Puerperal fever, black plague, measles, diphtheria, whooping cough, typhoid, typhus, cholera, smallpox, polio, and more that had periodically culled humanity before the 20th century. As journalist Torsten Engelbrecht and medical historian Klaus Kohnlein, MD, explain in Virus Mania. Here's a quote. Epidemics rarely occur in affluent societies because these societies offer conditions, sufficient nutrition, clean drinking water, etc., which allow many people to keep their immune systems so fit that microbes simply do not have a chance to multiply abnormally. End quote. Interestingly, the CDC researchers and many others found that medical interventions, including vaccines, antibiotics, and surgeries, had almost nothing to do with historic drop in lethalities from contagions. Here's another quote. Medical measures appear to have contributed little to the overall decline in mortality in the United States since about 1900, having in many instances been introduced several decades after a marked decline had already set in and had no detectable influence in major instances, in most instances. By the mid-1980s, infectious disease mortalities had plummeted so precipitously that Reagan White House officials considered disbanding the CDC. As I show in my earlier book, The Real Anthony Fauci, institutional panic from this proposition within CDC prompted government-funded virologists and vaccine promoters, including Anthony Fauci, to launch a parade of self-serving prophecies of imminent pandemics. None of them ever materialized. During the first year of COVID, the reverential press glorified Mr. Gates and Dr. Fauci for their uncanny forecasting. But their fortune-telling acumen begs this question. Was it those reckless gain-of-function studies that Tony Fauci and his friends were financing in laboratories from which engineered superbugs were almost certain to escape that made the two men so certain we were in for a coronavirus pandemic in short order? As the world now knows, Dr. Fauci sought through his gain-of-function experiments to deliberately develop highly virulent, easily transmissible coronavirus pathogens purposely souped up to be capable of causing a global pandemic. Dr. Fauci justifies his long fascination with these perilous conjurations as useful for anticipating and improving pandemic preparedness, and for developing preemptive vaccines for animal viruses before they jump to humans. Yet, if that's truly the case, how is it that we were still so woefully unprepared when a pandemic hit? As we shall see, Dr. Fauci was paying irresponsible U.S. and Chinese scientists to breed, house, and transport pathogenic Uber germs in Wuhan's poorly managed and shoddily constructed facilities, virtually ensuring their eventual escape. Dr. Fauci laundered federal grants through a sketchy and duplicitous British-born zoologist named Peter Daszak, whose organization, EcoHealth Alliance, was funding this dark wizardry. Daszak and his EcoHealth comrades were funneling not just American taxpayer dollars, but U.S. proprietary bioweapons technology and intellectual property as well to Chinese scientists for the purpose of creating pandemic pathogens. His partners in this collaboration included the reckless Chinese shrimp scientist Xi Zhengli, her team of researchers most associated with the Chinese military, and a potentially ethically challenged University of North Carolina professor, Ralph Baric, who was among Anthony Fauci's most favored grantees. Mr. Gates and Mr. Fauci's prescient bodements about the nature and timing of the COVID-19 pandemic were, perhaps, less brilliant feats of soothsaying than reasonable bets on an occurrence that Dr. Fauci's handiwork made inevitable. In April of 2020, I was among the early writers to call attention to the history of Dr. Fauci's dark obsessions with gain-of-function research at the Wuhan lab. I posed the question, quote, might Dr. Fauci's experiments have helped create the pandemic that President Donald Trump has now appointed him to manage? End quote. I recommended that Congress inquire whether Dr. Fauci, by toying with these sinister alchemies, had opened the Pandora's box that loosed COVID-19 upon the world. Instagram flagged my post as vaccine misinformation, and on February 10th, 2021, cited it to justify my eviction from the platform. I had, by then, nearly 800,000 followers whom Instagram sought to shield from such dangerous thoughts. And that is the end of chapter 1. The next section, before we get to chapter 2, there's a little part 1. It says The Road to Wuhan. And I will start my next episode with talking about that timeline. It starts at 1914 and ends at 1991. And it's like the timeline to Wuhan. Thanks for listening. Tune back in next Wednesday for the next piece of this book.